You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colton Molesky. You can find my work on zonecoverage.com if you're looking for any more podcasts or written content, or you can always give me a follow at C. Molesky. Let me know what you think of the show, what else you'd like to see on the show, what guests you would like me to try and get, as well as just comments, questions. If it's basketball or appropriate to put on the show, then I'll answer any questions you have about me. Today we have a special segment. We're going to do fantasy basketball for all those who enjoy playing fantasy basketball or enjoy doing the draft, DraftKings, things like that. I have on a special guest. He is the host of the fantasy basketball podcast for the Locked On Network, Josh Lloyd. He's the connoisseur of all things fantasy basketball. Thanks for coming on.
No worries, Colton. Good to be on.
So obviously the season is over the halfway point. Hopefully everybody is doing well in their fantasy leagues. Hopefully you did some winning drafts, or you've had some winning trades, picked up some solid waiver wire pieces. Josh is here to advise us on what the next step is. First of all, Josh, just wanted to get your overall broad scoop. Who surprised you? Not the rookies. We'll get to them in a minute here before we get to the Timberwolves. But who surprised you just overall in the NBA? DeMarcus Cousins has exploded to the top. LeBron James obviously up there with James Harden and Kevin Durant. Those are the kind of guys you expect to be one of those staples. But who has surprised you that's more of a veteran?
Lou Williams. I don't think there's much doubt that he has been probably the biggest surprise of this year from a fantasy point of view and from a real-life perspective. He's just outside the top 20 in fantasy basketball this season. With, you know, obviously a few things have gone in his favor in terms of putting up those numbers. All the injuries, Patrick Beverley, Austin Rivers, Danilo Gallinari, Blake Griffin out for all that period of time. But he has put up numbers that you don't expect a guy of his age at his point in his career to change so much about his game and become efficient and take on this huge usage and just become really a reliable beast every night.
As someone who has Lou Williams on their fantasy basketball team, this is the best case scenario for him, especially this last stretch through January. He's averaging 31 points a game.
Yeah, no one could have predicted that he would go off to this degree, but he's also, you know, averaging over 5 assists per game. He's a guy that's always been a high-volume, poor field goal percentage guy, but he's almost at 45% from the field. He's always gotten to the line well, so he's doing that. He's hitting 40% of his threes. Like, he's just, the numbers are out of control, and maybe they reduce a little bit when Gallinari returns, maybe when Rivers returns, but he is the engine that's driving this team and keeping them in playoff consideration when many people thought they'd just pack it in when all those injuries struck.
Well, and that's the benefit, too, is that now that they're really trying to get back into this race and trying to make a playoff spot, they're going to be pushing really hard for these wins, and so he's going to be out there trying to put up numbers every single night to get wins. What about a guy like Jrue Holiday? Start out the season really well. This is probably one of the best seasons of his career. Is he somebody, even though he's played really well, that you can trust throughout the rest of your fantasy basketball season? Just because we know his history, we've seen him tail off more times than he's had success. Do you trust him going forward, or do you just continue to ride out his success?
I trust him. Look, last season when DeMarcus Cousins arrived, he struggled. He couldn't really find his spot in the offense, and his efficiency was at a really, really low point. Like, he was going like 2 of 11 on multiple nights, just couldn't hit any shots. And I thought, yeah, that didn't make much sense. As the offensive or the defensive focus shifted away from him, I thought he'd get easier looks. And so I was confused by that last year. But that's the way it's panning out this year. His efficiency, he's almost a 50% shooter from the field. He's in multiple games, he goes, you know, 55, 56% from the field. He is, you know, at the top 25 guy this year, averaging almost 19 points. He's playing a ton of minutes. I don't have any concerns with his injuries anymore. This is one of those things that they were really cautious about, you know, 2 years ago, and he's had no problems with that leg issue, much like Bradley Beal. That seems to be a thing of the past. I feel like with the way that Elvin Gentry is running things, he's pushing Drew back to point guard more, and really limiting what Rajon Rondo is doing, and that's helping Drew Holiday's value as well, pushing his assist numbers back up. I have no problem in trusting what he is doing at the moment. From an efficiency point of view, from a scoring point of view, from an assist point of view, I think that the assist can actually continue to rise as Rondo continues to get minimized.
I have one of the guys I play against in my fantasy league, for whatever reason, went heavy Pelicans draft this season, and it's really paying off for him. He's got Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday on his team. Who would have thought that a heavy Pelicans draft would pay out throughout the season?
Oh, yeah, both those guys have been tremendous value as to where you drafted them. Like, Cousins is a guy that, you know, you could have got probably in the second round in most cases, and he's almost a top five guy, and Holiday was a guy that was, you know, sliding outside the top 50 in a lot of cases, and he's right up there. Really surprising value from both of those guys.
The trade deadline is coming up. One of, I think, the key guys that is clearly on the market, as the Hornets have put out a for sale sign out in front of their building for Kemba Walker. I'm sure all fantasy Kemba Walker fans are wondering, what's the best case scenario for him? Where could he end up that maximizes his fantasy value in your mind?
I don't think he's going to go to a situation that's any better than where he is in Charlotte. In fact, I put the chances of him moving as being really, really low, given the statement that Michael Jordan put out a day or two ago, saying that he's only willing to trade him if he gets an all-star back, which I don't think is there's any chance of that happening. We hear the rumored location of him heading to the Knicks, which would be a pretty solid spot for him. Obviously, sharing usage with Kristaps Porzingis wouldn't be as ideal of a situation as he is in Charlotte, where he's the main guy there. But I think most of the places that would be wanting to take on Kemba Walker, they wouldn't be wanting to trade for him to become a backup or to become a fourth offensive option. The teams that would be looking to acquire him or willing to pay an amount that Jordan would find acceptable would put him into a fairly significantly featured role, and the drop-off that he would suffer, I don't think it would be all that significant. So you might see a little bit of a dip. It's not like he's running at a 32% usage, is at 27.5%. He's scoring 21.7 points. Maybe he loses a point. Maybe he loses a point and a half per game. I think everything else for him would stay fairly similar because, again, a team that would be looking to acquire him would be doing so in order to have him as a featured part of the team.
I got two other guys that I wanted to mention that I had in the pre-show prep that I wanted to bring up before we head to the rookie class and talk about their production. And they're both Oklahoma City Thunder players. First of all, Paul George, has he impressed you, or is this kind of right where you thought he would be on this team, production-wise?
It's sort of about where I expected him to be, a little bit of a dip in his usage from last season. I thought his efficiency would be much higher. Now, for the majority of this season, his three-point percentage has been higher than his two-point percentage, so there's something there that's got to give. He's at 42% from three and 44% overall from the field. And that's not a regular sort of split in that case. If you're shooting 43% or 42% from three, you'd expect your overall field goal percentage to be higher. So there's one of two things that can happen there, in that his two-point percentage comes up or his three-point percentage comes down. And what we're seeing at the moment is he's getting that mid-range stuff and he's finishing at the rim. He's starting to improve. So I think he's actually got room to get better as the season goes on. He's right in that range where most people would have grabbed him, in that middle of the second round. That's where he is averaging 21 a game. You're getting three triples and two steals. I think he's sort of, you're right where most people would expect it. In fact, I think he's probably a little bit better than some people anticipated, who would have let him slip into outside the top 30 as they were scared about the Russell Westbrook factor. But he's putting up numbers which I think would have pleased most people that drafted him.
No, yeah, I think, too, you had some of the people who drafted him pull back a little bit on maybe anticipation of his value, the way that the Thunder started out the season. And don't get me wrong, they still have some rocky games, but I think that at least the Russell Westbrook and Paul George pairing has kind of come along nicely, and he's really found, I think, now a role where his production, I think, will only go up, but I don't think there's much chance of him decreasing in overall production throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I think, look, as I said, I think he can get potentially better than what he's been as that two-point percentage comes up.
And then the other guy, Carmelo Anthony, I actually know some guys who were high on him. Of the three kind of stars, the big three on that team, he was the guy that at least I and a bunch of people I know who cover basketball for a living anticipated him being kind of the guy who put up the least amount of numbers, the least stats. And but some people were really bullish on him going into the season. Is it too late to kind of try and buy out of this Carmelo Anthony if you are a Carmelo Anthony owner on your fantasy team? Is it too late to try and trade out of this because you're going to get way less than you really want for him? Or do you just roll with him and play him sparingly?
I guess it depends on the makeup of your league. We all know, you know, working in NBA media, there are crazy people out there who think Carmelo is significantly better than what he is. Like, oh, he's a top 10 player. I've got into arguments with people before this season started that said that he was a top 10 player currently in the NBA. So there is crazy valuations of what Melo is like as a player. So if one of those blokes is in your league, then you trade him away because you would be able to get more value back. But I think the majority of people will look at his numbers and go, yeah, averaging 18 and 6, yeah, doing it relatively inefficiently, 42% from the field, true shooting 52, and think, well, that's sort of what he is there, the lack of defensive numbers, he's not getting assists. This is sort of who he is, and I don't think that you're going to be able to get significant upgrade on that. So you just stick with where he is as that guy who's, you know, around a top 100 sort of a player, and you just ride that out unless someone, again, is really sucked into it or has this, you know, these blinders on as to what he actually is as a player.
I had an argument, a real argument on Twitter with somebody headed into the season, and he was convinced that Jeremy Lin was a top 3-point guard in the NBA. So if there's somebody like that in your league, take advantage of these people, get a good trade. Otherwise, yeah, you probably have to just play him sparingly and pick your matchups.
Jeremy Lin Twitter is a weird place. It's up there with Derrick Rose Twitter. That's an interesting one. I get into plenty of arguments there. They are probably the two weird. And Rajon Rondo Twitter is also a good place to have when people just go in and search his name and then come back at you when you say a comment like he's not very good and they just go back at you. Oh man, you had 15 assists. How's that not good?
If you can just
there's a three weird areas of Twitter, I reckon, in the NBA.
If you can just get into Brooklyn Nets Twitter for a little bit, just do it at like 10:30, 11 at night. Just get into Brooklyn Nets Twitter and then say something disparaging about D'Angelo Russell or Spencer Dinwiddie or something like that, and it'll be rewarding.
It's fun. It's rewarding. It's frustrating, and it's all of that rolled into one. I'm more go the Chicago, the Derrick Rose one. That's real fun to me because the level of delusion there is out of control. But there are plenty of options where we can pick fights.
It's not that way now because the Jimmy Butler kind of craze has fully swept over Minneapolis and Timberwolves Twitter. But before this season, like at the beginning of the season, or even the last few years, getting into Ricky Rubio Twitter was an interesting place to go because the only Twitter fans of Ricky Rubio are either fully against him or they fully love him and they're convinced he's one of the best point guards. There's no in between.
Yeah, that is true. I've had plenty of the arguments with the anti Ricky Rubio people, and they're pretty vociferous in their criticisms.
Oh, they're mean. They're mean people. We're gonna get to a break, and then we're gonna cover the rookie class before we get moving on to the Timberwolves and how they've done in fantasy basketball. The rookie class has been one for the ages. It's been a delight to watch. It's been really fun to see how they've progressed both on the actual court and on fantasy teams. As somebody who has Ben Simmons on their team, I've appreciated some of the things that the rookies have done. Let's go over the studs first. Donovan Mitchell is the one that comes to mind, but also Jason Tatum, maybe not the biggest numbers, but he's always consistently efficient shooting. What has surprised you most about this crop of rookies and how they've performed?
I was, you know, obviously massively surprised with Donovan Mitchell. When we did the Utah Jazz season preview back in September and David Locke came on, he said, I think that Mitchell's going to average 15 points a game. I said, David, I know you're in the team. I think you're being a little bit crazy. I think you're being a little bit optimistic there. Turns out he was wrong because Mitchell's going to get close on average 20 points per game, which is just insanity, especially given the way he started off where he was just jacking shots uncontrollably and just destroying his own field goal percentage. But now, all of a sudden, he's efficient. He's almost a lock for 20 points every night. He gets steals. He gets assists. I have been stunned at the way that Mitchell has just taken over this team and taken over that city, really.
He is so much fun to watch, too. Not only is he averaging really great numbers, but he's doing it in a way that's so much fun to watch with all the windmill dunks and the way he plays in transition. It is a joy to watch him play. As somebody who bought a ton of the Dennis Smith Jr. and De'Aaron Fox stock headed into the season, and I actually drafted both those guys late in rounds to kind of see how they'd pan out. A little bit disappointing. Some injury problems with one, and De'Aaron Fox just hasn't been as huge of a stud on the Sacramento Kings as I'd hoped. Got burned by those guys. Who's kind of a hidden gem that maybe doesn't perform every night out of this rookie class, but has had some solid games that you've seen out of the rookies?
Well, you know, the current, I guess, thoughts on Smith, as you mentioned, people are quite down on him at times. I think he's going to be a top 50 guy from here on out. He is outside the top 140 at the moment due to some poor efficiency. But if you see what he's been doing lately, he's a top 50 guy over the last 2 weeks. He's seeing more minutes go his way. His efficiency is coming up. His three-point shooting's coming up. He's having multiple 20-point games. I think he is going to be a monster. But the other guy that I want to pay attention to is John Collins in Atlanta. When Budenholzer finally figures out what that front court is and that the front court shouldn't include Miles Plumlee in any sort of circumstance, now Collins in 26 minutes per night could be a top 50 fantasy guy. We saw his last game. He had 13 and 16 with four blocks in only 26 minutes, and that's with him not even shooting efficiently. I think he was at 39% from the field in that game, and he's normally a 55 to 60% guy, and he could very easily have multiple 20 and 10 games down the stretch once Ersan Ilyasova goes, and if Dwayne Dedman goes as well, then the sky is the limit for what Collins can produce.
Josh, you stole my thunder. I was just about to bring up John Collins. I love watching this guy play. I think he could be really good both for the Atlanta Hawks and on your fantasy team. The dude just loves to jump. He just loves to be in the air, and he's a great rim runner as well in transition.
Yeah, look, he's not a guy that's got any semblance of range or jump shot really at this point. I think he's hit maybe two threes for the year, but he blocks shots. He has that high efficiency. He shoots well from the free throw line. He's super aggressive with offensive rebounding. He's already averaging, you know, three offensive rebounds per game in only 20 minutes, which is super impressive, especially for a rookie. You know, as you said, he's jumping, bouncing, putbacks, all that stuff. Really aggressive in those areas, and they're the things that really translate to good fantasy numbers. And I think we're going to see him start to push forward towards the middle to end of February and get 25 a night pretty comfortably in terms of minutes, and then maybe push forward if Ilyasova clears out, if we have no Luke Babbitt or Dwayne Dedman or whoever, what other random big men that Budenholzer wants to throw out there.
And there's something to be said, too, for the guy who just knows what he's really good at and tries to stick to it. He's not jacking up a ton of threes and missing and being terribly inefficient. Like you said, he's a really efficient guy. He knows what he does well, and he sticks to that. And the minutes that he does get, he is really productive because of that, because he knows what role he's going to fill, and he plays that to a T, which is something I can appreciate. And the way he does it, too, with all the putbacks and with slam dunks and his speed and transition, even though he's kind of a bigger guy, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch him play.
Yeah, absolutely. He's super exciting, and it's something that the Atlanta team, who is struggling, has got something where you go, well, maybe we can see this guy as a decent part of our rotation moving forward in the next 5 to 6 years.
We're going to have one more quick break for some sponsors, and then we're going to get into the Timberwolves basketball players and their fantasy numbers. Obviously, Jimmy Butler and Karl-Anthony Towns kind of headline this group. Were you surprised at the production that especially Karl-Anthony Towns has put up? I mean, the man's almost a double-double every single night.
Not really surprised. Actually, I think a lot of people in fantasy circles are a little bit disappointed in the numbers that Towns put up. A lot of people were looking at him as their number one pick in drafts. He wasn't a guy that I was looking at there, but I thought he could be a top five guy. I've been a little bit disappointed with the shot distribution sometimes with the Wolves, with Andrew Wiggins and Jeff Teague seeing more field goal attempts than Towns on more occasions than I would deem ideal. Even Jamal Crawford comes in and sometimes takes more shots. I think Towns is down 4 field goal attempts per game, as opposed to last season, and obviously Butler's got to take those shots, but I would have preferred that they go from guys like Teague or from Crawford or from Wiggins rather than taking them away from one of the most efficient offensive big men in the game.
No, yeah, it seems like everybody, the focus kind of going into the season was who was going to lose shots, and people were anticipating guys like Teague or Wiggins lose shots, and really Towns, if anybody loses shots on a night-to-night basis, more often than not, it's Towns, and that's a little bit unfortunate. Some of it, too, I think, is Taj Gibson is down low a lot, and really you'd like to see Towns worked into the post more, but unfortunately he is not down there.
Well, Andrew Wiggins leads this team in shot attempts, which I don't think is a great utilization of the offensive talent on this team. Towns is coming in third in field goal percentage. I think he's coming in fourth in usage behind Crawford, Wiggins, and Butler, which again he's improved his defense, but he's not known as a defensive center. He is one of the best offensive big men in the game. And yeah, the scope is there for him to be a 25-12 guy instead of a 20-12 guy. And that's, I guess, a little bit disappointing for where fantasy people expected him to be. And especially this recent run with Butler out, and he is seeing way fewer shots. I don't know what's going on there. He's averaging 14 field goal attempts per game for the year, but he's getting like 7 shots and 8 shots with Butler out. It seems that there's no, I guess, offensive structure to get him the ball in that case, and Wiggins and Teague are really just dominating offensive proceedings, which I don't think is necessarily the best way to go about it, but I'm not the coach.
Well, it's definitely a discussion maybe for another time, but definitely would like to see him taking more shots. Before we head out here, just on the bench, guys like Teague, guys like Jamal Crawford, Gorgui Dieng, they're not putting up numbers that you would really recommend having them on your team night in and night out. But is a guy like Crawford worth having on your roster just as kind of the ultimate boom or bust kind of guy from a night-to-night basis where you kind of have him there maybe hopefully via the matchup he has a 20-point game?
No, I don't think there's any need to have him in any league that's any shallower than 20 teams, really. He's the 250th ranked player so far this season. Look, he averages 1.2 threes a game. You think of Jamal Crawford, I can add him, he can get me points and threes. He averages 9.7 points and 1.2 triples. You're better off getting a guy like Darius Miller from the Pelicans who averages more threes. You could get Davis Bertans, who's more of a threat to go off for multiple triples than what Crawford is. And look, maybe if there was an injury, maybe if Wiggins was out, or we might see it now if Butler misses more time, Crawford gets a little bit more in this playing time. But even in his time at the Clippers playing 27 a night, he wasn't really a must-own fantasy guy in that setting, and he's obviously playing much fewer minutes in Minnesota, and I don't think there's any necessity to have him on any real roster in any sort of fantasy league.
All right, any recommendations on Timberwolves guys? I mean, obviously you want to get a guy like Butler or Towns, but outside of those guys, before we leave here, any recommendations on who to pick up if you get the chance outside of those top two guys for the Timberwolves?
Well, we know that the Timberwolves run their starting lineup the most out of anyone in the league. I think it's like 300 minutes more than the second most used lineup in the entire NBA. So there's very little value outside of those five guys, Towns, Butler, Teague, Gibson, and Wiggins. Yeah, Gibson might be available in some shallower leagues, and he has got pretty strong value for where he is. He's shooting at a career-high field goal percentage, which at some point might start to come down, but we're 50 games into the year, so maybe it won't actually change. Wiggins has been disappointing from his fantasy production. He's dropped his points per game by 5 per game and doesn't really do much else in the other categories. The guy you want to look at and always have an eye on is Gorgui Dieng. If Towns or Gibson has to miss any time, and neither of those guys have missed a game this season, then Dieng would be that guy that would slot into that position. And with his ability to get steals, to get blocks, to be a high rebound and high efficiency guy, then he, even if it's a short run of 30, 33 minutes a game, he would be a comfortable top 100, top 70 sort of a player. He's the guy to pay attention to. But pretty much anyone who moves into a role, we've seen it with Nemanja Bjelica recently. We saw it with Tyus Jones earlier on. Whoever moves into the starting role, they're just given 35 minutes automatically, and their value appears that way. But otherwise, this is the most stable team in terms of rotations throughout the NBA, and there's very little opportunity for other guys to break into it.
Josh, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. If you have any other fantasy basketball needs, make sure to check out Locked On Fantasy Basketball on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks again for coming on, Josh. Really appreciate it.
No problem, Colton.
This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast for the Locked On Podcast Network.
Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast.